Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
I'm Lou Bank.
And I'm Greg Benson.
And this is an ad for Ancestral Agave Syrup, the critically acclaimed award-winning syrup that helps gringo bartenders better make margaritas, Negronis,
Lou, hold up,
old
are you just
fashions?
This is how you start your podcast.
What?
It's not an ad for Ancestral Agave Syrup.
Well, of course it is. I'm just cutting costs by not paying writers to make something new. I'm just using an old script.
You pay writers?
Is that some kind of jab?
No, I'm just saying
What are you saying?
Well, look, we've got this amazing syrup that's made in an ancestral manner, cooked down from the sap of the agave, harvested the way these families would to make pulque. It's a quality product. It deserves a quality presentation.
Yeah, okay, hang on.
Ancestral agave syrup is made by real families following traditional methods. Unlike the industrial Blue Weber syrup you get everywhere else, Ancestral is cooked down from agua miel harvested from Salmiana in Hidalgo, Mexico. It is the grade A Vermont maple to the sticky diner syrup you've been using for your cocktails. Ingredients matter, both in how your cocktail tastes and how you treat the earth. Ancestral is better for both. Is that good?
Sure. Or maybe confusing instead of cheesy. Look, just visit ancestralagave.com to learn more and to order your world-class agave syrup today.
And we'll call that a wrap. Catch you next ad, Greg.
Hasta pronto?
Ancestral Agave Syrup, available online at ancestralagave.org and wherever Greg and Lou are able to coerce store owners into carrying it.
I'm Lou Bank.
And I am Evelyn Botello Cotton of Mezcal Amaras.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Green Geeks bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, rural Mexico, and cultivated meat.
Meat?
Yeah. Okay. So there was the... Yeah, thank you. Boy, I wish I could have recorded that look in your eyes. Okay. So there was this New York Times op-ed about the imploding dream of cultivated meat. And Joe Fassler, he wrote this, and what he wrote, I'm just going to quote him here. He wouldn't call me back, so I don't have his voice. So I'm going to quote him here. He wrote, it being the cultivated meat, was an embodiment of the wish that we can change everything without changing anything. We wouldn't need to rethink our relationship to Big Macs and bacon. We could go on believing that the world would always be the way that we've known it. And so as I was reading this, Evelyn, it struck me how, a number of things struck me, but the biggest thing that struck me was how much this felt to me like what I see in rural Mexico that really does draw me to it.
So I think it's very interesting you chose that particular quote because that was towards like the end.
Yeah.
And when I just reading the title and then the first few paragraphs, it was a very long article, by the way.
You're the second person to say
it.
You know, it's so
it was
funny.
So long.
It's so funny you'd say that. I got it. Like, it's funny. I'm normally very impatient with articles. I am. Like, I get to the point. Like, so much of what
he's a mister.
To me, he's a doctor.
Okay.
Yeah. So much of what Professor Fassler wrote spoke to the things that I have felt, and the way that he phrased it with such clarity, it felt to me like a very short article.
It was not. But I thought it was, but to that, I think it came full circle, because that was my first initial thought when I read it. I was like, well, is it the meat or is it like our behaviors?
Yeah, that's exactly right. But in essence, the article, okay, so, you know, A, everyone should read this article. If you don't have a subscription to the New York Times, like, you can't. And if you, like, you really want to read it, but you don't want to pay, I'm a subscriber because I have to be for one of my clients. Not that I'm a New York Times snob, but I have to be. And I'm allowed to gift, like, to, I think, 10 articles a month. So if you really want to read it and you don't want to pay for it, email me through the website. And I swear I'll send it to you, because I think this is such an important article. Wait, what was the point?
Oh, is mezcal, agave, are we getting there with the cultivation of agave as well? Is that
right? Well, yeah. So you started talking about behaviors, right?
Yes.
And so I think that that really does hit the nail on the head so much. What he's talking about in my mind is you've got this attempt to, in essence, grow meat outside of animals, right? I mean, don't confuse this. There's another problem with the plant-based meat alternatives. And I think Chloe Sorvino does a great job of discussing that in her book, Raw Deal. But the other side of this is sort of this assumption that there's this rush. The corporation saw how human beings were spending a lot of money on alternative plant-based meats. And there was this explosion in the market, the trend in the market towards this. And so they started putting money into actual, like, cultivated meat, taking a few cells from animals and using plant processes to duplicate them, so that you would, in essence, be creating meat outside of animals in a way that doesn't impact our environment as negatively as having a factory farmed pigs.
And I did a little bit of research on this, Lou. And I did, how long does it take cultivated meat versus the actual processed meat?
Yeah.
So for cultivated meat, it takes about 2 to 8 weeks to produce.
Yeah.
And it's very expensive.
Yeah. Well, right now. Right, yeah, now, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah,
still like very new technology.
Yeah.
For pork, if you were like pork that's being used for consumption,
yeah,
it takes anywhere from 22 to 26 weeks. For cows, 14 months to 42. And the 42 month mark, or like the higher end on that, you're talking about prime meats, like very small percentage.
So the 42 months, that's for actual living cows, not for the stuff that they would be growing in the cultivated labs.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then for chickens, it only, a chicken that is mass produced for our consumption, just I guess commercially, it takes 6 to 12 weeks. So cultivated meat in general, takes anywhere from 2 to 8 weeks, depending on what you're trying to reproduce.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. It does cut time. And I mean, there's an ethical of how do we treat these animals that are being produced just for the consumption of to kind of satisfy our need for the meat, and goes back to behaviors. Mm-hmm. This also reminded me of another just life experience. So just going back to when I go visit my family in the rancho. So
in where?
Rancho.
What state is that in?
So Peñolitas and La Calzada in Guanajuato.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever it's so interesting, because when I first started going back after many, 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 many years, I remember this very, very clearly. They had like the chickens, the cows, whatever, all these animals running wild. And we were there, so it was a special occasion. So it's like, oh, not, it's a special occasion. Let's have one of these animals. Let's have a chicken.
Yeah.
And my aunt will signal to the dog, hey, like, chase one down so the chicken will come and then my aunt will grab it and do one of these.
By one of these, the hand moment you're making is like you're cleaning the windshield.
Yeah. And then literally the head and the body became two and the chicken will run around. And then I was like, oh my God, how can you do that to the, like, it was very brutal in my eyes, but they weren't just having these animals just for consumption. It was part of a system for them.
Right.
And they were only eat it when it was a special occasion or we had like special visitors or like when that particular chicken is like, oh, it's getting to the point where either we eat it or it's just going to die.
Right. Right.
So that also reminded me of like those experiences.
And when you say it reminds you of the experiences, do you mean it reminded you of how important the experiences are or how much you'd like to avoid those experiences?
Well, in retrospective,
mm-hmm.
again, when I was there, I was like, this is like so mean.
How old were you?
I was probably like 17.
Okay.
And I just thought it was cruel.
Is that when you became vegetarian?
No.
Oh.
That was later in life. I still ate the chicken.
You still ate the chicken. You felt badly, but you ate the chicken.
It was really good, by the way. But what my point with that was that as I grew older and better understood how we consume food and that mass production of it, it's like, okay, well, as in my mind, in my young mind, I was like, damn, that's kind of like, that's kind of mean. But now I'm like, she was doing it. I mean, that's the way when, you know, people live for millennia and it was working just fine until our behaviors because of, I don't know, I don't want to even say technology. I want to say because we were better, like we now have more resources and we're able to get things faster. That's how what we expect now.
You know, I actually do think it's technology. You know, I remember as a kid in the 70s, I don't need to hear from you. I remember as a kid in the 70s, the conversation was about zero population growth. And the point was we need to reduce the population or stop expanding the population because we can't feed this growing population. And at some point in the early 80s, they figured out factory farming. And factory ranching, but, you know, also factory farming. And they figured out how to very efficiently grow pigs and grow chickens and produce eggs in a system that, as you are alluding to, is not always considering the welfare of the animal. But even more than that, I would say, in addition to that, right? Is not considering the welfare of the environment. And I think that this movement of cultivated meat, in essence, is the next step of kicking that can down the road of not wanting to deal with the actual problem, which is I'm not saying that people are bad, but I am saying that our species is growing inordinately and takes up so many resources, and we're putting ourselves at risk by thinking that we can just tap our heels together, grow meat in a silo, and everything's going to be fine because it doesn't take into account all the other carbon emissions that we create as our population grows.
And that was another thing that really stood out to me, the fact that we're creating more band-aids in the sense like I just want to make sure that I feel good about what I'm doing. I'm putting my part, which I guess, you know, I have a little bit conflict with that because I say that myself, like, oh, at least I'm doing my part. I'm recycling. At least I'm doing my part. So I am
nothing you recycle gets recycled.
But
Evelyn,
but I still do it.
Yeah, well,
because you
but
know,
but that's
what?
Also,
it,
that's
it
a band-aid.
It makes me feel good.
But this is the problem. Like the whole thing used to be, I don't know, like you, again, might be too young for this, but we used to have three words. Yes, smartass. We used to have three words. It was reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, if you can't reduce, reuse it. If you can't reuse it, recycle it. And instead, we just skip to that last word. And as a consequence now, you know, something, last time I looked at figures in the city of Chicago, where we are sitting right now in the mobile agave road trip studio, something like 9% of what is actually turned in to be recycled is reported as being recycled. And if they're reporting 9%, being the city of Chicago, it's probably more like 0.9%.
So very true.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know a better system. That's my issue.
I do. This is exactly my point, exactly what I want to talk to is, I think the better system is rural Mexico. You know, I think this is, I'm not suggesting that that I'm living the way that they are or that I even could live the way that they do. I've been raised in a completely different way, in a completely different environment, but I feel myself so compelled to move closer to how I see lives being lived in these rural Mexican communities. And I know it's significantly more sustainable. But the irony in that is we get so drawn to the idea of that in places like cities like Chicago that we try to bring it to us in these 750 milliliter bottles. And in so doing, we start to transform these very same communities that reflect the things that we're drawn to. It's this weird, and I'm not saying everybody should stop drinking mezcal.
No, never.
I'm not saying that, but I am saying I think it's important that we recognize what it is that we love about these spirits. And you know, if really the only thing you love about it is the flavor, cool. But if your heart is also, this is so hippie, but if your heart is also feeling what my heart is feeling every time I, like the reason I'm drawn to rural Mexico when I drink these spirits, if you're feeling like there's something else going down in these communities that we need to be more like, I mean, I stopped using, this is going to sound so stupid, particularly for a guy with no hair, but I stopped using, it's okay, you can laugh out loud. I stopped using a shampoo out of a bottle. And that might sound, it not even sounds minor, it is minor, but I started using bar shampoo, which I see a lot more of down in Mexico. So now when I go down, I buy, you know, as I'm creating this carbon wake behind me, I'm buying this shampoo that's a bar shampoo, bringing it back. And so now I'm not creating, you know, every 6 months a plastic bottle that goes into a landfill for shampoo.
That's a stretch. 6 months for your head.
6 years. Okay, 6 years. I also put it on the hair on my back, so I go through a lot of shampoo.
Touché.
Yeah. But I think it is important to us to recognize all that we love about these spirits that reflect the beauty of these communities and try to be not exactly like them. It's not going to happen, but more like them.
I agree. It is very, and this goes back to what we originally started talking about, which is changing behaviors and adopting behaviors outside. It's very pretty to see it, you know, in Mexico, but how to adopt those behaviors in real life, in your real life, like practically in your real life, like living in a city as we do. So that's, and I don't know the right answer to that.
Oh, I don't think any of us knows the true answer. But I think it reminds me so much of The Good Place, that TV series, right? Like, none of us is good. We are all sinners, right? But if you can do just a couple of things a little bit better every day, you know?
Well, this takes me back to, like, people who are very big into gardening and then growing their own vegetables.
Yeah.
And then once the season's over, taking those vegetables and creating like preservatives or whatever to, mm-hmm. you know, continue, not the waste aspect, right? Reduce that. And also people who have like the chicken coops and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, okay, I get my own eggs, maybe a chicken here and there from time to time. So these are ways we can help, but it's not something that, I mean, I don't do it. I want to, but I don't do it.
Well, you don't do it at all, or you don't do it completely?
I don't do it completely.
Well, nobody. Well, I shouldn't say nobody. Again, rural Mexico. But, you know, I think the important thing is that we don't. I think it's really hard. You can't go. Well, you can. You can go on a 100% diet and not eat anything and then die of starvation, right? I think the way to make
a change sustainable, a way to change the trajectory that you're on and continue on that change trajectory is to make small adjustments, tiny little baby steps that put you in a better direction.
Well, something else came to my mind as I was reading this was people, I guess, as if it's approachable for them, like you said, step by step. But with this cultivated meat, a lot of it has to do with flavor as well. Like if it tastes good or and we can manufacture it eventually at a more cost efficient or whatever and make it available for mass production and then having these people think, oh, you know, you're conscious meat or whatever. It kind of took me on the tequila kind of aspect in the sense that it is very well known that in tequila you use immature agave is used. And this was when an explosion of...
I'm going to get so many hate emails from this, but keep going.
No. I mean, listen, the explosion of adding additives because that was a way to make it palpable to drink something that was diffuser created into something that, hey, we have... And I'm not hating. I'm just saying people think about business. Mm-hmm. Is it going to make them money? What's going to make them more money? And this was our fault because we were on the tequila train. So the more people that consume it, well, you put pressures and tequila, as you've discussed, mezcal, tequila, the DOs, they have to follow certain regulation. The same regulations that are used to protect can also be, I mean, put these stresses. So it's like, okay, yeah, we have to pump out volumes of X, I'm going to say spirit. I'm not going to call out the tequila. But it is not a secret that these additives are extremely sophisticated and there is big money behind them. So, and it's the same thing. It's the additives not only with tequila, but also with food. Like people with the ramen noodles in that little package, that you know, that took a lot of sophisticated, you know, science test, whatever, to create a flavor that was good. Like, oh, this is good.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what it is.
Sometimes when I'm eating those ramen packets, I'll, instead of adding hot water, I'll add hot tequila just to... You do the whole, you know, flavor on flavor thing. But, you know, to your original point, I think everything that you just said, while I might quibble about some details, I think everything you just said comes back to how you started, which is this is about our behavior patterns. And if we do not adjust our behavior patterns, the idea that you are what you eat really like resonated when I was in my teen years, right? That was a big message. You are what you eat. Oh, and so, you know, I started slowing down on the Vienna beef and all that. But now I think, you know, while that's still true, I did slow down on it.
No, I was going to say Vienna beef, isn't that supposed to be like, oh, we're so proud of Vienna beef? So I would think you're like, hell yeah, like, yeah, so what? I'm Vienna beef.
Yeah, you know, Vienna beef. Yeah. I'm hot and wet.
Yeah.
But that's a joke only Chicagoans will get. But I think now what we need to think about is that we are what I eat. That the drop in the bucket that is my consumption is a drop in the bucket. And every bucket is just made up of billions of drops. And if we continue to just dismiss that one little drop every single time, our buckets are going to flow over.
Well, this was another thing I thought about when I was reading this article. And actually, something that you just stated right now, like, you know, our behaviors, if we didn't have this, like, thirst to consume these products and just did it responsibly... Well, that same drive is what is bringing back money to the communities.
It is, and I believe me, I recognize the good that resource can be in those communities. But I also recognize, you know, when the pandemic hit and we all got locked down, right? Suddenly, people in Chichicapam were starving. And yes. And they were starving because they had gotten so used to the dollars that would come in from tourism. So when tourism locked down, right? But the communities that were further out that weren't accustomed to tourism didn't have that. They weren't addicted to that same drug. This, you know, like, and I'm not saying that we should all stay where we are born and never travel. I'm not saying that either. But I am saying that I think we could do a much better job as a species about being balanced.
I couldn't agree more. Unfortunately, I think that industry speaks volumes where there's money to be made. And unless we can figure out that balance, it is, like you said, it is up to each individual to really take a introspect view and mm-hmm. being like, what, okay, like, what is it that I can do? And to really create, it might be small, but like,
like my
those
shampoo.
Steps. Yes. Yeah. 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 I mean, and then everybody in Mexico does it.
Right.
They have beautiful hair.
Yes. Yes. Even people with beautiful hair can do it. And like we were talking about the bidet, right? That's another great way. My God, I was reading an article about toilet paper and how it's got the forever chemicals in it. And so you're right. So I just want you to Google that. Forever chemicals, toilet paper, okay. And you will never want that stuff touching your butthole again.
Wow. And that's personal.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a piece. That's
personal.
A piece of you that you do not want to have to tear out.
I don't even want to think about that, Lou.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going down the dark hole now.
Yes, dark hole. That's good. That might be the joke to conclude the episode. Was that intentional, the dark hole?
It can be.
Okay. Unless you have something else to add.
Just thank you, Lou, for having me.
Oh, thank you very much. I will catch you next episode, Evelyn. Hasta pronto.
Adios.
You've been listening to Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. We're blessed with sound engineering by Roy Sierra and a theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Ricos. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, well, I'm sure you'll let us know that too. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Agave Road Trip. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc. Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization using the power of educational storytelling about food to build a more equitable, resilient food system. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network might lead you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If you drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly. Drive responsibly. Eat responsibly, too. And listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive. Do not walk either. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to stretch every 30 minutes. If you stretch every 30 minutes, please stay within your defined stressing capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you don't have a doctor, maybe Dr. Ryan Acock, the Cocktail MD, can help you out. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.